This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded February 19th, 2012. Episode 83, Aggravating Agurgia Agiotage.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel of Chris Gammel's Analog Life.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dave.
We screwed up again.
Oh, on multiple fronts. we should announce Bunny Huang is not here right now. He's nowhere to be seen. Yeah, I got that completely wrong last week.
Well, you were hungover from drinking live on the show, yeah. And
oh,
B, you were only off the plane for a couple of hours.
Yeah, that's probably a bigger thing. But yep. Money's next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Well, you know, we got to check his schedule still, but like he's scheduled, but we got to make sure. We have to verify. That's the main thing, so.
And it's Monday, right?
It is Monday. Yeah, it'll be your Monday.
My Monday, not Tuesday.
Monday.
I got up this morning, not a care in the world. It was going to be MakerBot Monday. It was going to be the MakerBot build again.
That. And MakerBot Monday.
MakerBot Monday. Yeah, it sounds like a song.
Mm-hmm.
Manic Monday. Yeah.
Manic
MakerBot Monday.
Just another MakerBot Monday.
That could be the name of the show, Manic MakerBot Monday.
There you go.
Oh.
Boom. All right. All right, we're doing better already.
And yeah, I had just completely forgot that we had decided to shift the show to Monday my time. And because it was Tuesday the last 2 weeks because we had Jeff on because you were away. So we slipped back to Tuesday and I just got into the Tuesday mode again.
Yep.
I think we'd only done the Monday once, hadn't we, or something? And then
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah, it doesn't affect our listeners. They listen when they want to.
Yep.
The magic of podcasting.
So I didn't feel so bad because you screwed the pooch too. So
yeah, exactly.
Know, it's always wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like a company, when everyone's at fault, no one's at fault, you know?
Yeah, you just all kind of laugh about it, go out for beers after work, and everything's good.
Yeah.
Then you all get fired.
You know, the $20 million project's down the toilet, who cares? Because no one's at fault, right? I love it.
You know who's at fault there? Management for not planning better.
Exactly. That's the ticket.
Yeah, that one always works, right?
Right. Yeah, they got to blame themselves.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. Sure, yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of poor planning, how's your MakerBot build going?
If you've seen the 5 hours worth of live
I started
casting,
watching that when you had
it
live last
watching.
Week, and man, that was boring.
Boring is bad shit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty boring.
Building a MakerBot is not...
You should do a TV show about that. Building a MakerBot. It'd be like, do you ever see the movie The Truman Show with Jim Carrey?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's just like his life. Yeah, that's so boring.
Inside the dome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But at least he's unaware of it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, no, his life is exciting. It's just exciting to everyone else because everyone else is in on the joke. You know, maybe everyone else is in on the joke, laughing at us because we're trying to build this bloody thing.
Right? Yeah, MakerBot's actually watching you guys build it, and they're like, wait till they find out we didn't include that screw.
Screw right at the end, yeah.
Just that one little tiny screw.
Oh, man, we thought that had happened a couple occasions because we couldn't find the damn things. We spent like half an hour looking for... One screw.
Yeah, that's tough.
Literally. It's just, and I don't know.
So you're still pretty negative on the whole kit thing, huh?
Oh, yeah. It is very time-consuming, and I'm sure it's very satisfying at the end when you actually see it actually print out a little 3D bunny rabbit or something, but...
Yeah.
Gee, you know. Yeah, it's tough. We got two sub-assemblies built. I'm not sure how many are to go, but... These are just like, we did the Y sub-assembly, the Z, and I don't know, I think we're up to the X, or maybe we did the X, but yeah. So hopefully we can actually start assembling the big frame thing today. So that's always the
key. You know, you always feel like that's the most accomplishing thing, but usually psychological, right? That's not the hard part.
No, we've just got the build platform, the heated build platform, which was supposed to take 40 minutes, and then... You know, it actually took 2 hours.
Did you have to do any soldering or anything?
Not yet. There will be some soldering today. Yes, there's one board in there which is a kit of parts. I'm not sure why, because all the other boards are assembled and tested and, you know, stepper motor. Oh, that's right, because it's through hole. Yeah, I think I did this on unboxing because, anything SMD, they didn't. But there's this one through hole board that came as just a bag of bits. So,
well, at least you know how to do that.
Yeah.
And you can practice your speed. Did you hear about the Spark Funds doing their little speed soldering contest?
No, I didn't.
Oh yeah, it's like at some bar. They're having like a speed soldering contest. So if people don't know about that, I'll pump a link in there. But it's a cool idea. I like it.
Is it SMD or through hole?
I think both. I think they're doing kits and.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to use? Mechanical advantage tools like a big proper ball tilt PCB
like a
stand. More than the Panavice, you know, really fancy one that actually.
I don't know. They should have like different divisions.
Right.
I'm telling you, man, new Olympic sport right here.
Right. The old farts like me who don't use these fancy Panavice scenes, we just put the board flat on the bench, right, and flip it over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I do it too, you know. Torque the leads a little bit so the parts stay in there.
Yeah, exactly. And then they just flip it over on its back.
They should have like a no flux division.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
And there's an SMD toaster reflow oven, you know, version.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, you have to be modern, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You could have you can have a lot of different versions. I'm not sure. I don't know if I'd participate because I'm pretty slow. Right. But I bet there's some technicians out there that are just killer, you know.
Is this like a live thing where people get together like in a hackerspace somewhere, or can you submit a video?
No, it's at a bar. This is like a live event out in Colorado.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So if people live in Colorado, they can go out there, and one of my former coworkers lives out there now, and he was challenging me to go out there, but I can't do it time wise, but you know,
right?
I guess people could have their own at home.
How far is Colorado from you? That's a fair hike.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's like a 3-hour flight. So
yeah, well, you got to hop on a plane just to go to Colorado just to participate.
Just a solder, I don't think so. Yeah. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. No, give it a miss. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Speaking of which, you're flying out tomorrow,
right? Yeah,
I'm
going out tomorrow, yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Because this is a work thing.
It is a work thing.
Maybe you can tell us in general.
Yeah, perhaps. I think so. It's just it's this manufacturer of a power component that I work on, and they're just like, well, we're done. We're not making this anymore, and we're closing up shop.
Power components, as in a power supply?
Like line power.
Okay, like so a main switching power. It's a custom switching supply for you, is it?
Yeah, or? Something like that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and so, they're like, well, we're going away.
Yep.
And you know, I'm sure people
are actually shutting down.
Yeah, they're just closing the business. I'm not sure. I don't know any of the, I didn't feel like it was a proper, you know, to ask why. You know, there could be personal things or
how big's the company?
I don't know. Obviously
it isn't a public company, right? It's a private
company, privately owned. But it's small.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and but yeah, it's going away. And so I have to do a knowledge transfer, which I'm sure some of our listeners have had to do before.
Oh yeah,
maybe
I've been
you
there.
Have even. You have?
I've been all the way to Germany to do a technology transfer. I've been
really?
Yeah, I've been 30 hours on a plane to
holy crap. Get half...
Yeah.
How did it work? I mean, did it work? Am I wasting my time here?
Well, it kind of worked. Yeah, in the end, it was ultimately a waste of time, really, because the company didn't do anything with it. We may as well because the company wasn't shutting down. We just decided that we would buy the rights to the company had designed this data recorder, seismic data recorder product thing, and we'd been buying it from them, and we decided, well, we're a huge multi-billion-dollar corporation. We shouldn't be doing that. We need to own the rights to this. We want to modify it, and we've got big plans. So we'll buy the rights to it, non-exclusive rights, and we can then
modify it
ourselves. Yeah. And 3 years later, we were still making it exactly the same as what we did when we bought it from them.
Yeah, you know,
so there's no changes at all. And
there's something to be said for keeping that out there, like having someone else make it for you. You know, it's always more expensive.
Yeah, it's
but
easier
when you don't have to swap out components or deal with all those little things. Sometimes it is worth the money. You know,
I know. Well, I went to the trouble to, you know, when we got back, everyone was keen, right? The first job for me when I got back was to transfer all of the PCB design, schematic and PCB from some German package, some package they were using, into our, you know, Altium package. Mm, yeah, so I went to all the effort to redo the whole design. It was, you know, five boards or something, six boards. Yeah.
And then it's really yours.
And then, but then they said, oh, just to make sure, let's do it exactly identical to start with. You know, let's make no changes.
Oh,
let's not,
not
bite off more than we can chew. And then 3 years later, we're still manufacturing that same identical unit.
That's always tough too when you're like trying to do like the exact same thing, because there is that paralysis. It's like, oh, well, don't change that. I mean,
you
can't change a spec. There's always different levels of what you can change.
Yep.
You know, the highest level being like, don't change the packaging, right? But
yep.
You know, eventually, like, I don't know. I just think it's cheaper just to keep buying it from people.
Yeah, I know. So,
but I don't have that option.
Right. So. Well, they are going out of business, so that's a different
thing
entirely. So, yep.
Yeah. So basically, I'm the messenger. I'm the guy that's shuttling data between that company and a new manufacturer. And
yep.
We're still going to do third party. And yeah, so I'll be out in Arizona.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
For how long?
2 days.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
How far is Arizona from Cleveland?
Oh, probably about 7 hours of travel time with like layovers and everything.
Oh, okay.
I'm really mad. There used to be Continental used to be like a hub in Cleveland, and they just merged with United, so they're no longer
right.
It's bankrupt. Harder to get flights. It's not bankrupt. It's just harder to get flights, and you know, like that's
right.
A significant cost. Like I always tell people, I'm willing to pay more for faster flights. I don't travel that much, but it's
I don't know. Can't believe like it's the FedEx model, right? Everyone said FedEx would not work, right? What the hell does anyone want to have a package delivered in 24 hours for? That business will fail. They had a hard time getting funding for that because nobody believed in it. And,
really?
You know, yeah. And sure enough, how huge are FedEx, right? They own more planes than Continental.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
just the logistics in general are crazy.
Yeah.
So.
You know, yeah, people will pay more for good stuff.
Good stuff fast.
Yeah, fast, you know. Yeah. It's good service, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's true.
I know. So I can't see why you can't survive on a, you know, having a business model like that, even as an airline.
Hmm.
Mm. Strange. Maybe people take it for granted that there's always been so many flights by so many different carriers that, oh, we don't need to pay a premium for a good one.
Yeah.
We'll get the, you know, the penny pinches at the company will get the, you know, the cheapest possible flight they can. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. I mean, well, it's the same thing for, I mean, circuit boards too. I mean, you'll pay.
Yeah. You pay a premium to get it in 24
premium.
Hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge.
That's the worst when you pay it and then you're like, oh, I guess we could have waited.
Hey, could have waited. Yeah. We were
or,
experts.
Oh, I did this too fast.
Yeah.
I messed it up.
Yeah. And we would pay, you know, $2,000-$3,000 to get a board turned in 24 hours because the
single
boss
board.
Wanted it to play with on the weekend, you know. So, and it was just pissed down the drain, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the worst one. It's just there. It's just fast because it feels like you need to be fast.
Yeah, and you really don't because, it's been there, done that.
Yeah.
No. Oh. And I guess the other thing about the annoying thing about these technology transfer things I found is that I went over there, you know, we're transferring technology too. There's a lot of technology inside this product, like how the algorithms work. There was lots of fancy, you know, this was a leading edge
kind of
product, handcrafted magic smoke kind of product, you know. And I spent a couple of weeks there learning all about it and everything from the guy who designed it. And I went back. I was tasked to write a report about it all and which ones are important we need to learn about. And I had to transfer the technology to everyone else because that's the idea, right? Transfer the technology from one company to another and had to train people.
Get the photocopy effect where it's never quite as good, right?
And nobody cared. I said, we've got to do this. It's urgent. You know, I had a whole list of priorities. This is important to do this and learn this and tweak this. And nobody gave a shit, you know? And...
Mm.
Nah, We'll just make the same thing and we won't care learning about it. What do we want to do that for?
Yeah.
And it's just disheartening, you know.
It is. Anytime you have a purposeless project or, you know, like it's
hey, not
purposeless. We didn't know it was going to be purposeless, right?
But in the end,
it ended up being, right?
So yeah. Yep.
That always hurts.
I know.
Yeah. So hopefully not.
I didn't care, really. I got a free trip to Germany, right? I hadn't been to Germany before.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been out there.
No?
Maybe someday.
Yep. It's good.
I've never been to Phoenix either, so we'll see. And it's a nice time of year to go down there, so it's nice and toasty down there. It'll be like going back to Hawaii, you know, if Hawaii was a desert.
Right. Okay. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got some news.
Shout-outs. News first?
We always do shout-outs first.
Yeah.
After 15 minutes of ranting.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There's a couple people that linked to us, and so we always like that. We'll mention that real quick. One was my friend, actually, Mike Demler. He used to write for EDN, and now he's writing for Open Systems Media, which is
I've heard the name, I think.
Yeah. And he does Open Systems does like real niche kind of stuff, like military electronics and stuff like that, like the magazines about that. So anyways, he's got a new analog magazine, so he linked
magazine.
Us.
Magazine?
Well, I think there's, I don't know if it's a magazine yet, but there's at least a newsletter here.
Right.
An analog newsletter. And so he linked to our last show. So we like that a lot. And hopefully
thank
some of his
Mike.
Readers. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mike. And there's another kind of fledgling, real fledgling site. Oh, it changed since the last time I looked. It's called EE Forest. And one of the first posts was talking about the amp hour. So we really like that.
But
and,
I can't see the forest for the trees. Sorry.
Yeah, so that's Alex, and thanks to Alex for linking to us, and well, I was like that too. So quick shout outs, nothing fancy there, but
thank you very much, guys.
Maybe one last one too. That book we mentioned, what was it called? It was
Leslie Green's
book. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So we actually
Analog Secrets with a
secrets,
Z or something.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, yeah. S-E-E-K-R-E-T.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. Anyways, we crashed his site and he ended up having to move the book over. But if people really like the book, we really encourage donating to him. So he has a donation set up.
Yes, please do.
So because
that took many years of his life to do that book, you know. And
it was published and it got basically it's
and,
no longer
well, you
print,
can actually but. Buy the hard copy book. So the other way is to buy the hard copy book from him. If you don't actually want to donate, you can get a real copy of it and he'll, because he's already, you know, he's got all his copies
printed. Oh, yeah, he does like self-publishing.
And,
something like that. Yeah, so definitely support him. That's great. And it's a good book. I've browsed through it, so I like it.
Right. And
speaking of education, you saw this post. This is one you added, right?
Yes. Well, there's, that's the top one, right?
Yeah, the top one.
You can now get an online certificate course from no less than MIT.
Who?
Free.
MIT? Who's
MIT?
That?
I don't know. I've never heard of them. Some dodgy mob out in, I don't know. Where are they based?
I believe it's Montana. Montana Institute. No, just kidding. They're in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Boy. Yeah.
Right. And MIT are offering... Actually, they will give you. You can get a certificate from MIT. You can apply online. You do the course online. It's an electronics course, and
it's the intro course. Yeah,
it's the intro course, and I'm not sure how long it takes or anything like that. But certainly check it out. A lot of people on the forum have already signed up for it, and
yeah, I've seen this bouncing around a couple different sites, and it looks great. I mean, this is kind of following the Stanford model too. I mean, MIT and Stanford have both been doing a lot of open education kind of things like that.
Their videos, we've talked about them before, their videos are online. You can practically do the entire MIT EE course online with their videos, you know.
Right, it's awesome.
It's just that you don't get anything at the end of it. Whereas this, they will actually test you. It's not like you do it and they give you the certificate. You've got to sit the test and apparently. So I'm not sure how that works, but sure they've figured it out. So
That's great. I love it. I hope this trend keeps continuing. I mean,
how it works. Is it a live casting thing where you actually sit in with a live lecture with one of their professors? Or how does it, or is it just watch these online videos and sit the test? Is that?
Usually when I've seen these things, it's been actual videos, but...
Right.
I
so the videos are pre-done.
I haven't signed up for this. I've taken my intro course. I'm done. Thanks a lot.
Right.
But oh, yeah, it's, let's see. You can, man, you can just sign right up here. It's great. Hmm. So
they've got a whole, I can't believe the amount of stuff they put into that intro course.
Oh, yeah.
Have you looked at, so, I mean, talking about scaring away people who just came straight from high school and picked engineering and go, oh, yeah, I'll do
it's a weed out
and
class, for sure.
You have to do all this basic theory stuff, and it scares the shit out of you. Why can't you just, you know, build something cool in your first intro class or something?
Right, yeah, and I've written about that before, too, because there's a lot of kids coming out of high school that aren't, you know, necessarily electronics, but they want to be in electronics. Yeah. And that's how I was. So yeah, start
and they
with,
jump
like,
straight
class.
Into physics, right? And they jump, you jump straight into, you know, all the physics of it and everything else. And it's like, oh yeah. My, is this what engineering's about? Oh no,
right. It's
you
tough.
Know, and
it's tough, especially it's, when like we keep saying, oh well, there's not enough engineers. It's like, well, huh?
Yeah,
I mean, look
well,
at this class,
one of
right?
The reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you could ease it. Man, I know, and there's a lot of debate about that kind of thing too.
Yeah, there is. I know.
But I've been out to MIT. I've talked to people about this class before, and it's a big weed out class. This is how they separate the wheat from the chaff. And if and if that's at MIT, you know, that's some pretty darn good wheat.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And they wouldn't hold back. They wouldn't dumb it down. They would.
No.
They would. You know. They'll be doing. You know, Maxwell from First Principles. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yep. And you know, I've talked to I tried hiring a guy out of there, and he actually did his grad work there, and he was telling me about like when he was TAing classes like this. Being a teacher's assistant. So,
ah, right. Of course.
It's just tough because, you know, you have these kids that are so smart and like perfect students in high school and everything.
Yeah.
And they're passing this class, but then they walk up to you and they're just like, you know, they're just space cadets because to get through some of these classes, you have to be a superior student, but not necessarily a superior like electronics person. And so then, then the real learning begins in labs.
It's got nothing to do with electronics, really.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with practical engineering. It's really, it's theoretical physics and theoretical engineering. There's a huge gap between those two. It's,
and this is very important in its own right. I mean, it is. I mean,
of course
we both took courses like this. You know, it was, but yeah, you're right. When it comes to day to day stuff, you're not going to be you know, you need to have rules
it's
of
like
thumb.
It's like I said,
I
haven't used an integral in anger in 20 years.
In
the
anger,
business, right?
You said?
In anger, yeah.
Well, it's always in anger, right?
You know, yeah, but you use
the
concept
doing
of
here?
It.
DX, what?
What? I know. It's, But
yeah,
if you go back and teach it, or you go into the physical side where you're actually doing research and stuff, yeah, it's important, you know? You've really got to nail that stuff, but otherwise it's just, you know, garbage in, garbage out, really.
Yeah. Yeah, there was this. There's this interesting book. I mean, I've talked before about Dan Pink on here, and I'm a real big fan of Dan Pink's stuff. He wrote Drive or a bunch of other like innovation type books.
Yeah.
But he has this new ebook out, and I was reading it the other day, and it was talking about turning like the one way to innovate is to kind of turn things on its head. And he was giving this example of a teacher that did that, where the guy, basically, the kids came into class and he didn't do anything the first day, and then they went home and they watched the lectures, and then the next day they came into class and they were still doing problem sets, but they did the problem sets in class, and then the kids went home and the homework was actually to watch the lectures, and then the next day they come back in and they all work together on stuff, and just how that's like a really interesting model, and this is kind of feeding into that too. I mean, it's like the newest version of this, the online version, is that, you know, watch it on your own and hopefully work together with people. But the older model, like the weed out class at MIT itself, is definitely the sit in class, get lectured at, and then go home and crank on homework, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, isn't Dan Pink's model to turn everything upside down, do it differently? Is that the way? Because you sent me one, and that was the gist of it, right? Is to do the opposite of what you think you should do.
Oh yeah, that was. I think I did send that to you, didn't I? Yeah.
Yes, you did. Yeah, you might read this; it'll change your life, Dave. You know. Yeah. Okay.
So I just do everything backwards. Yeah.
And that was the idea of this Dan.
One of the many ideas, but
Yeah. Do everything upside down. Do the opposite to what you would normally do, and the opposite in this case would be not to do all the theoretical shit. It'd be to build a MakerBot or something, you know?
Or design a circuit board straight on the first day.
Yep.
I like it.
Blow something up, you know?
Yeah, blow something up. That's what I like. Make an LED light up. You can start with that, right?
Tear down something, you know? Do something different rather than...
But anyway, maybe not at MIT. You know, they have their traditions. Yeah, they can, they're cranking out some good people still. So until they stop doing that, I think we'll probably have to take our back seat and just sit here, Dave.
Just
yap on about it.
Fair enough. Have we covered off that bingo square?
I think so. Yes.
Excellent. We've got another bingo square, marketing.
Yes, marketing and possible...
And well,
shonkiness with it, right?
I think it's shonky, and a lot of other people do. I know it will appear that it's standard industry practice. Doesn't make it right, though. What it is it's from the forum. Simon on the forum, he discovered this, I think. And Element 14 are buying up the KiCad keywords on Google. Which is standard business practice, right? Buy up your competitors' keywords so that somebody, when they search for your, you know, when they search for KiCad, your ad pops up. Fair enough, okay?
Right, and that's, I totally agree with it up to that point. Yeah, you probably would do the same thing if you advertised, right?
Maybe, right? Okay. But that's standard in the industry, right? Everyone does that.
Yeah.
And but that's not where they stopped. Not only are they buying up the KiCad keyword, their title is looking for KiCad ? And then they give you a fake URL that's Element 14 or Farnell's, you know, / KiCad or something, right? So it makes it look like if you click on that, you're going through and they're going to have info on KiCad for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But no. What? The URL is fake. There's nothing there. You click it, you get taken through directly through to, surprise, surprise, Eagle, right? Which Element 14 own.
Yeah, go buy a license of Eagle, right?
Yeah.
Which we are, and we like Eagle, but not necessarily the paying for it. So.
Yeah. So the problem I and many others have is that they're sucking you into thinking that there's something about KiCad on there. And
the shady part is if you type that in directly, and Simon talked about that. I had done this, and then I saw that Simon talked about this on the forum too. If you type it in directly, it's not a real link, which means
They hid the link underneath. It's some convoluted... Right. Yeah, it's a link directly to Eagle.
Right, because if you typed in farnell.com/KiCad or KiCad or however you say it, then if it still took you to that Eagle page, okay. Yeah, I'm still okay with that, actually, too. You know, why not try Eagle? You know, try it free and then pay for it.
It'd be nice if, you know, here's a breakdown of the benefits of Eagle versus KiCad
table
or something. That I could probably... Yeah. Deal with that, right? That's fine. But not when you know, because people are searching for KiCad because they want to download it, try it out. They've heard about it. It's open source, right? They're trying to find it. First hitting Google. So what are they going to do? They Google it. First hit takes you through to get information.
Advertising
on it. It dilutes the effectiveness of Google. You search for something and you expect... The reason Google got so popular is because it was so good at putting the stuff you wanted first.
Yeah, but that was an advertising thing too. It does have that slightly different off-color, you know, search box. It is getting less obvious.
Yeah, but they've got the graphic there with the link and the text. That's the deceiving part. And they haven't just done it for KiCad. They've done it for OrCad and every other competitor.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So, it's just, it's not on. It's not on.
Yeah, it's a little shady.
Yep.
Well, like
please
I
explain.
Told people...
Element 14.
Yes, I would like an explanation.
Because everyone's
as well,
pissed off, and you're not going to win any friends by doing this. Seriously, the dickhead marketing person who didn't think about this is, you know.
Right, and it could be one person, and it could be, you know.
Yep.
We're not saying it's a whole company, but.
No, they're just following their standard deceptive marketing practices, right? And they've probably got a freaking promotion for it because they met their KPI for this month because they got X link throughs, you know?
Yeah.
Bastards.
Well. I would say stick with KiCad.
Absolutely.
Look for the real link. I don't know. I always look at the URL myself anyways. I guess that's why it's deceptive
But everyone looks at the URL of what they're visiting, and there it is, embedded you don't go to, in the graphic.
Girlsgirlsgirls.org or something .xxx or whatever the new domain is. Right. Yeah. It's like, okay, I probably don't think that one is... that's not going to be a PCAD program. But
so somebody's actually gone to the effort to make that graphic to embed that fake URL in the ad. So they've deliberately done that, and they're deliberately targeting a small time, open source tool. You know, it's just no, it's not on. It's bad enough when you do it to your competitors, and you've got a deceptive URL to do it to the little guy, to kick the little guy in the nuts. Come on.
Yeah.
Not happy.
Well, I've been using KiCad lately. Did I tell you about that?
No. How's it going?
Yeah. So this radio project I've been working on.
Yeah.
I ended up deciding between going for speed and going for having a project. I went for having a project. I was thinking about going for speed and just doing like a, you know, Arduino and a wave shield and simple.
Right,
and,
yeah, of course.
You know, just trying it out. Yeah. But I was like, no, you know what? I need to learn more about microcontrollers. So I'm actually, I'm mid-layout right now.
Sweet.
Yeah, and KiCad is actually not bad. I mean, like, I know a lot of, I had started making videos about it, and then I kind of got off track.
Yeah,
but I found this great tutorial. It's just a printed one, and it takes you straight through. And you know, I've been making footprints schematic symbols, and got my micro in there. Ended up using a ATX Mega, which is the same one used on that.
Yep.
It's used on the Gabotronics. What's that little? You know what I'm talking about? That. What's that called? Like that. It's the one that plugs into the proto board. And then also that CEE I'm working on, the C is that also is. So yeah. It's great. I'm mid project.
Excellent. Have to give it a go. I need to find time to learn all these packages because I want to move away from Altium. Because they're
kind of going through the same thing, right?
Yep. Yeah. I need to pick a new package. And it's sucked in Element 14, I don't think it's going to be Eagle.
No.
Because I don't like your deceptive marketing practices, and I don't like how you...
That's weird, because before what you were saying, it seemed like you love them. It's so weird that you're just changing your mind right now.
No, I've been bitching on about their... Oh, boy. Yeah, I've been bitching on about their price breakdowns, the limitations in their sizes forever.
Yeah.
A few other people in the thread on the thread we're talking about here on the forum have bitched about that too, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's another comparison out there already. Erin, Robot Girl, people know Robot Girl on Twitter, she actually did this. She already started a comparison, and she did some time lapses and stuff between Eagle and KiCad and Jita. Or GEDA. Is it Jita? Do you say Jita, right?
It's actually Jita, yeah.
It's Jita? Okay, yeah. Yeah, because you talked to DJ before, DJ DeLore.
Yes, I have. Yep.
Yeah, you had that video. Yeah, so great comparison, though. She's just kind of going through and seeing how she does it. It's a pretty nice little board, you know, like a SOIC-8 and some through holes, and looks great. LM317 looks like, so very nice. I like it.
That's what I want to do. I want to do a big shootout. I've said it before, but it's a huge amount of
work.
I
mean, yeah, yeah. Doing that kind of
like
stuff,
a shootout
board
between
captures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so. then you got to have a table comparing them. You got to have, you know, make sure it's fair, you know, fair between packages and trying to do it objectively. And,
you know, the best case scenario would be to like somehow like do a board and then wipe your hard drive and wipe your memory. And then do it again in a different package.
Yep, exactly.
And then it would be fair, right?
That's the plan, is to do it, have a standard board and then create all the components from scratch in each one and lay it out from scratch in each one and then edit it in each one and revise it in each one. And, you know, and then ultimately have a big table of how, you know, ultimately I'd have to personally rate things, you know, like how hard was it to create a footprint? You know, I'd have to give it a scale of 1 to 10 or something
exactly.
like that, you know.
You need like a rubric.
Right, yep. And it's just a huge amount of work.
It is. So kudos to Erin for doing this. And actually, she links through to Wayne and Lane, who they do open source hardware kits as well. And they've got another tutorial. So lots of tutorials to check out if people are interested in KiCad. And I've been pushing this a lot lately, too. I mean, like, I think I just want people to do it alongside me so I don't feel...
No one wants to do that, right?
You know, you don't want to be like, oh, well, yep. I had this whole board I developed, and now no one can see it. And that's what I mean, I did like that about Eagle, that they switched over to XML. The hope is that, you know, it would become like a standard format.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think you got to kind of go to a open source thing, or else, you know, if there's any kind of business advantage in it, then there's always going to be an angle, right? So
Yeah, that's right. So Yeah, I know. So my preference at the moment would be to use KiCad, certainly. I don't think Jita's an option. Jita is quite, from everything I've heard, everyone says it's quirky. You know, it's really not nearly as polished. It doesn't use the whole IDE interface. It's very script-driven and all that sort of stuff.
It's kind of like, you know, Penguin geeky. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really Penguin geeky kind of thing. And whereas, where it's not nearly, you know, it doesn't have the same. As good a visual user interface as KiCad, apparently. So
yeah, that's tough too, you know, tying those things together. Because I remember that when I started programming, I'm like, okay, when do I make graphics? And like, that's actually a really long way down the line, actually. You know, when I was...
On an LCD?
Yeah, well, you know, like I was like just programming like C++ or something like that.
Yep.
And like actually tying, you know, you're all doing text-based and command line stuff.
Yeah,
and,
of course, yeah.
Right?
That's how you start.
And output is all text-based. And you think about how long it takes to actually get to the graphical side of things, where you're actually tying a graphic even just to a, you know, like a click action, that kind of thing, like in a Visual Basic. You know, like Visual Basic is a little bit easier, but...
Yeah, I mean, you have to use a library, you know. You've got to use some sort of pre-done library to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like if you've got a microcontroller, embedded microcontroller, you've got a little embedded LCD, you know, a dot matrix LCD. To do that from scratch...
Yeah, that's true. You got to do like letters. You have to like do like BMPs of letters and everything.
Font rendering and everything. Yeah. It's a pain in the ass, right? Yeah. And it takes a long time to get Hello World on a dot matrix LCD unless you use a pre-done, you know, library of stuff. So, yeah.
Which you might have to pay for.
which you may, Or you may have to tweak. I always find that the libraries out there for driving LCDs, they're not what I want. They weren't implemented in the way I wanted. Easy, you know. They're just in some convoluted, weird system of C that I've never freaking seen before, because they're software penguin gurus, right? And they're doing things in C that I've never seen before, you know. And really convoluted stuff, and it's all designed to be C++ and object oriented, and I don't want that. I just want some one subroutine that just says write to LCD, you know, and that's it. And they're never like that, and I have to rewrite them, or I just give up in the end and write it from scratch sometimes, because they're not what I like.
Not everybody complains about your coding, and then
complains about my coding. Yeah, exactly. why didn't you use the library? Well, I couldn't figure out how to use it. It was too convoluted. I'm not a computer software expert and coding in object oriented and all that sort of stuff. And I just can't figure it out. So I don't want to learn that. I see no huge advantage for me to do that. So I just code the way I've always coded.
Yep. And I'm going to be that's why I'm doing my project too, is just to kind of, my coding is very kind of weak. I'm getting into that.
I think I'm actually pretty good at coding. I'm just not good at all the complicated, all that object-oriented, high-level, you know, real huge system
stuff.
Design.
Well, all
stuff.
The low-level people are all hardware people anyways, right? If you're doing low-level, you need to know hardware.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, but I've done some massive programs in my time. You know, I've done, you know, the 50,000-line programs. Yeah, I've done huge packages in my time. I've written, you know, entire packages from scratch and, you know... So, yeah, it's not like I can't code. It's just that I don't code like a computer software major, you know? I think there seems to be a big difference there. Because they're doing some, you know, because they were taught all these weird software techniques that are in all the software design textbooks. And, you know, I was never, you know, I taught some of that because I took some software classes, right? You know, so I know all about linked lists and all those basic concepts and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, as I'm sure there's lots of, there's all these other much more complicated methods and ways to do software out there that I'm not, that I really haven't learned before. So,
yeah.
Hence, I don't use them.
One thing I've always been really, very jealous about with software people is that it feels like you can work anywhere. I mean, I know it's not realistic, but it feels like it.
No,
you know, it feels like you can freelance and just do whatever you want. I've always liked that about like hardware description languages like VHDL and Verilog, because it feels like that's about the closest I'll ever get. But even that, you still need to talk to hardware at some point. I mean, you could write code all day long, but until you go flip some bits on, you know, transistors and just, you're not really doing
it. I know people in the VHDL domain who just live in the soft domain. They're writing test benches and doing algorithms and, you know.
That wouldn't be me, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't know. There's this article that was in the Harvard Business Review. Or actually, it's just a blog, I guess. But it was asking about, like, crowdsourcing labor and just, like, the future of employment. And I've been saying for a while that, like, I think even hardware-wise, I think that, you know, over time, you're going to see more and more people going away from corporations and, you know, going to freelance kind of situations, you know, being an expert in a certain area. And then a lot of people contact that person. So if Dave, if you're an expert with, you know, LEDs, right, go to Dave and he'll design you an LED board because he designed 14 other LED boards in the past year, you know. And this is talking about crowdsourcing labor and if it's going to trump permanent employment as well. And I think it will. I mean, I don't know what you think about it, but.
Well, then it already has. You can already do that. You can already, with all these online specific job things, you can actually bid on a job online. I need somebody who's an expert at doing this. And of course, and it's been taken over by the Indians and everyone else.
Oh, like consulting companies out
there. They will outbid you every time. You know,
but that's not the kind of thing I really I think about it more of a relationship based. Hey, I need this kind of person. You know, I would never go on those sites personally. I would because I couldn't compete.
Well, if you were a business, why wouldn't you? If you're looking for somebody who can do the job for the least possible cost, that's what business is, right?
Well, I know the real
somebody
cost
who can
behind
do the
that.
Job for,
yeah,
I mean that's.
I know
of course,
the real cost.
You want somebody you can trust too, right?
Right, that's the real cost.
if you're going out there for the first time, and well. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess if you need like a Java generic Java program, right?
Right.
Then Tata Consulting can hook you up, right?
Tata Consulting.
Well, that's like a really big design house out
oh,
in
is
India.
It? Okay.
Yeah, no, it's just real. It's that's a very legitimate, very large.
Well, they're a car. The Tata's a car.
Oh, Tata Motors. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting the right name right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right.
But
okay.
Yeah, they're very legitimate.
Right.
Consulting firm out of India. So
right.
Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, I think that this is a reality there with one asterisk on it. I think that the big deal, at least in the US, Australia's already got this figured out and damn near every other country in the world, but you know, healthcare in the US, you know, if you have to buy your own healthcare here, you're screwed. So if they figure that out though, I think that you see this even more. So I don't know.
Right.
If I could do healthcare, if I got easy access to healthcare, see ya.
Yeah, right.
Analog Life LLC, you know, like that's.
Well, it's not hard. You just pay for it, right?
Well, yeah, but
that's the US system.
That is the hard part. Yeah.
Right. Is it that expensive?
Oh, it's
is
very. That, yeah, it's very expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
How expensive are we talking about?
We're talking like probably $700 a month for minimal coverage.
Oh, ouch! You can get $700 a year here for private health insurance for basic
thing.
Private health cover.
Yeah, and it is a touchy issue around here. I get it. I mean, like it is in the U.S. It's a very touchy issue, and I don't want to get into it much, but I think that if it ever gets figured out, however it gets figured out, and I don't have to work for a company in order to, you know, get healthcare because that is a big benefit. if that ever gets worked out, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot more people moving into the consulting space, because then it's more of a, you know, one person
okay,
here.
Okay, so you think that's a huge thing holding – I can picture that being a huge thing holding people back from doing their own consulting gig.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder in other – like in Australia even, I mean, do you see more people working freelance than working corporations, or are there other benefits that I'm missing out on, even just ease of work, or, you know, like self-advertising is another big thing, right? I mean, if you don't
yep. –
if you can't get that work, then there's no guarantee. If there's no guarantee of the work, then yep. yeah, that's something big.
It used to be more advantageous to be a contractor here. Like, I was a contractor 15 years ago or something, and it was pretty advantageous. But then they changed the tax laws, and now it's not so good to be a as in where you work through an agency or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. That's not very advantageous. But as far as working on your own now, it's the same as what it's always been, really.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
And there's other benefits too, other than like the availability of work. There's also the social situation. But, you know, even see I read about this thing the other day. It was about shared workspaces are popping up a lot of places because
yep.
you know, so many software yep. people were working out of coffee shops, but now instead of having a coffee shop where a lot of people go to work, they have a workspace where people pay to go, and then they happen to have coffee there.
Right, okay.
You know, it's just rolled in. And
yeah.
that's kind of a – because people don't want to just sit in their house either. They want to be able to
right.
get out and
yep.
talk to people and
right.
be human. yes, even software people and hardware
but
people.
But that could suck away a lot of your time, though, and your focus.
That's true.
So you've got to be careful there.
That's very true. But at the same time, I mean – if you go crazy in your house, I bet, you know,
right.
or if
yeah,
you sit on Reddit all day, right? You know, like
right.
that's a tough thing. I mean, I've talked to
yeah.
people who, you know, like, it's just you have distractions anywhere. So
yeah.
it's about where you perform best. And
right.
I mean, you get distracted
by
the forum,
concept.
Right?
Having no, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the internet in general.
Yeah, yeah. right. That's my killer too.
Exactly.
So it's wherever you work best. And some people work best in shared workspaces. Some other people work in, you know, hackerspaces. Hackerspaces kind of...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They encourage that kind of work too, and I think that's smart, but wherever you work best, that's what's important.
Shared workspace, that's interesting. See, but I don't think I could do it. Like, I couldn't share my lab with
no.
somebody
our
else.
Hardware
you know,
is
I
a
just,
different... A hard,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got to, like, you know, lug your stuff along even, you know, because you don't want to leave your DMM somewhere, you know, if you got to...
Yep.
bring a suitcase with you everywhere, that starts to get wearisome as well. But if you had a workspace for when you were editing videos, right? Maybe
yep.
that would work well for you. I don't know
right.
if you ever go to coffee. You don't drink coffee, so.
No, that's right. Yeah, I'm not a social creature. Engineers aren't social creatures.
Yeah, this wasn't
you're
this
freak,
article was
you know?
Not
you're
talking about. I'm a freak?
Well, you're a bit more social than the average geek.
I know I am a freak. You're right. No.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I don't know if it would work for me, though, either. I don't know if it would. So
right.
if people out there listening
okay.
have ever seen these, or if you work in a hackerspace, or if you just even go to a coffee shop, that I would be very interested to hear, you know, consultants out there or whatever people are doing out there, IT professionals. That's a lot of our audience, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, whatever works, I'd love to know about it.
Speaking of which, the Sydney hackerspace has moved.
Has it really? Where to?
Yes, it's actually closer to me now, so I'm going to have to go there and visit.
Yeah,
might even
definitely.
Become a member.
Well, hey.
Hey.
That is, as Jeff just said, he stepped out of the Austin hackerspace, didn't he?
Yeah, I know. He just left. He decided not to renew his membership. And, yep. I'm sure if I joined, I'd hardly ever go there because, well, you know, I'm not a very social creature. You know, just
I think you are. Come on, man.
I'm not.
No?
How do you think I talk to myself in a camera?
That's true. You are a little crazy.
Boy. No, I am definitely not a social creature.
Yeah, and that's the stereotype,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Can we talk about startups?
Sure. Let's
kind
do
of
it.
Sort of on the same.
Yeah, I mean,
so
a lot of startups start out
of this one's been on here
these...
for a while. Age matters, apparently. You put this one on here. It's
I did,
a,
yeah, yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, basically, the idea is that they did a study across entrepreneurs, and this is from Technology Review, which is another MIT thing, right?
Oh,
so,
right, yes.
Go
yes,
MIT.
Published by MIT, I see.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, though, it seems like a lot of the funding, you know, in Silicon Valley and everywhere else, they always want to go for these hot new startups and everything. But they did this study on it, and it says research revealed that the average and median age of the founders of successful technology companies with real revenue is 39.
Wow.
Which is crazy, right? Because, you know, I've seen The Social Network. I've watched all the...
Oh, right. Yeah,
it's just, it's just the press is, real, is right? focused, yeah. you know, or like even Apple and Microsoft and everything else. Mm. There's a lot of big names that
yeah, get all the get all the attention, and you think that's the that's the norm.
Exactly.
Is that they're all, you know, they all dropped out of uni and they're all 21 and they're all, you know.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and basically the idea is that, you know, as startups get more complex, so you think about like nanotech or
yeah,
or what do we have on here? We have graphene. We have on as one of the mm-hmm. items on here. You know, like, You don't just leave, you know, high school and go work on graphene because probably right, you don't understand what graphene is yet or haven't even heard of it.
Usually it's somebody who's done something as part of their PhD or something like that, and then they've worked in the industry, and then they've had the skills and the contacts to start it. So that, I guess it's
interesting.
It's interesting.
It gives me hope.
Probably.
It gives me hope.
It gives you hope.
I got time. You're
even
screwed.
I've
sorry,
still
man.
Got time. No, I've still got time. The average age is 39, right?
Right, exactly. And
there you go.
We found twice as many successful founders over 50 as under 25, and twice as many over 60 as under 20, which means
it skews
higher. It means that the median is much higher.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Boom. I've got a bright future ahead of me, Dave.
Well, you
could
call my blog a startup, kind of, in a
sort
way.
Of. Yeah.
In a way. Well, I'm making a full-time, you know, it's not like
I haven't employed
anyone
yet.
It's going to turn into a billion-dollar business, right?
I doubt that.
You know.
Yeah.
But do startups have to turn into that? Startups don't have to turn into huge corporations. They can turn into two guys in a shed.
Right, exactly.
Right?
And I think that's the real focus of it.
And you can be successful earning $1 million a year. Why?
Exactly.
Does, you know?
And that's like the middle. If you look at like the distribution, it's like a power law distribution where, you know, the ones that they study are the right, you know, they were started by young people, right? The Apples and the Facebooks and everything else. And that is a big chunk. But then if you look at the aggregate, all the ones that really fill out the middle, that really give you that beefy, you know, Pareto 80%, right? I just mixed statistical theories there, but you know, that beefy middle percent, whatever. That is these established engineers, startups, you know, business people, and they're starting companies and they crank out revenue. They do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the rest of it. So, it gives a lot of hope. I like it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Startup doesn't mean that you have to get venture capital funded and turn into a $1 billion business or flop, as the case may. You know, half of them flop, of course, and more than half.
Yeah.
Jeez, how many startups with venture capital fail? You know, it's a lot. And
a lot of that betting, as a lot of that analysis they do is, you know, okay, well, I'm going to fund 50. Small startups, and maybe one will hit it big, right?
That's the plan.
It's a slot machine model,
because
right?
when you win, you win big, right? You fail a lot, but if you get that Apple or that Facebook or something, then you're huge, you know.
Yeah.
The return on your investment is massive.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So this is a great article. I highly recommend reading it. It's great. Interesting follow-up to that, though, is talking about the Silicon Valley side of things. There was an interesting kind of it's not interesting. That's the wrong word. It's noteworthy. That's a better word. Yeah, it's sleazy, really. There's just back and forth, and they're talking about these Silicon Valley like wonks, basically. You know, they write about
wonks?
Startups. Yeah, like policy wonks or startup wonks.
What's a wonk?
Look at someone who analyzes stuff. A wonk.
That's a term I have not heard before.
I always hear it as policy wonk. Maybe maybe I'm wrong about that. A studious or hardworking person. There we go.
Oh, right. Okay. Well,
wonk.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wonk.
Yeah. A person who takes an excessive interest in minor details.
Oh, no. Okay. According to WordWeb, my dictionary just popped it up. It's a usage is in North America, of course, and it's an insignificant student who is ridiculed as being affected by boringly studious. What? Is... Huh?
Yes, yeah,
an insignificant student who is ridiculed as being affected or boringly studious. Wow. Mm. Ugh.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyways, someone who's interested in the minutia, but basically there's these people out there in Silicon
Valley.
Anal
retentive.
Yeah, and they study startups and everything, and there's this whole culture around talking about startups, right? And, you know, being like gadget blogs and everything else like that. And the idea is, like, they don't there's all these tech journalists now, and there's less of making stuff, right? There's so much focus on it because there's money in it now. And there's this one guy at I don't even remember what the hell it is, but basically the guy invests in companies and then he writes about it. And this is like an established model. It'd be like if Dave, if you went to like a scope company and said, "Oh, I want to invest in you," and then you go and do a worthwhile review of their scope once it comes out, and be like, "Oh, look, my investment's doing so great.
Great.
And now other people should invest in my fund." And it's just like, what the hell? That is sleazy as hell. And apparently, it's not illegal either. I mean, apparently that's how Silicon Valley works, though. I don't know.
It's actually kind of smart.
I guess
in a sleazy way, you know.
It's very sleazy.
If you can get away with it and don't care, then well,
yeah, exactly. If you got brass buttons, right?
Right.
Yeah, and that's what it would take. I mean, you know, there's I guess there's nothing wrong with it in terms of like because it's not public companies, you're not restricted, right?
Of course, yeah.
So it's not insider information or anything, and technically it's outsider information. But yeah, if you're investing in startups and then saying how great they are and, you know, you have a big audience, I guess, yeah, you can do that.
Right. Well.
And you keep
but
pumping
you gotta
this
have a
garbage,
big audience.
Though.
That's the key, right?
Well, you have to have a big audience that keeps lapping up your garbage, I guess, right? I mean, like,
right, yeah.
You'd think after a while if you keep picking losers.
That would catch on.
Right. You'd think so. But maybe I think another problem is it's more of a culture or a culture of personality. You know, it'd be like, I don't know. Maybe that's like for us. I don't listen to Chris because he knows what he's talking about, which is possible. You know, I've heard that from people. Yeah, you know, but you know, if I kept saying the wrong things over and over again, then yeah, I'd hope people would stop listening to us. But
right,
if not, you know, I would, and I started talking about how great these startups I've invested in are. I'd be a pretty sleazy person then. So
you're just jealous again because you're not.
Man, they're making so much
successful money
off it, but they're not making anything. You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like they're scummy people, and they're just not making anything. You know,
scummy people.
That was another thing. You know what? This pissed me off. This is a rant. This pissed me off so much. You know, I was reading this blog the other day, and it was talking about investing in scotch. I just started drinking scotch. I never really liked it. You know, I don't drink much of it. My wife got me a bottle for Christmas, and I've tried it. It's liked it. And there was this bottle about – or this thing about investing in futures, you know, or investing in the future and buying a bottle of scotch and then selling it for a lot more later.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote on there, I was just like, stop it. No. I want to drink this stuff, and you want to use it as an investment vehicle? Go invest in a friggin' distillery, you know? It'd be like people investing in gadget companies because they want to make money. It's like, no. Go – give a start. Go on Kickstarter, you butthole. Like, just go away and take your prospecting money everywhere. Oh, I hate it.
Right.
I hate it so much. Ugh.
Well, there's lots of parallel ones like that. The vintage calculator market, right?
Yeah.
I can't afford to buy the vintage calculator watch I want because they're so valuable.
They're hyped up, right?
They're so hyped up
that
they're... You know, I would actually wear it and use the damn thing,
right?
For what
is
it? No, people buy it and restore it and sell it for like $2,000, you know?
Oh,
and there's,
man.
And the whole industry is just hyped up, and you can't afford to buy these things to use it and enjoy it like it was originally intended. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, same. Yeah, there's other vintage electronics like that too. I mean, like if you wanted, you know, vintage radios or
if you wanted an Apple One, you know,
Apple One. If you actually wanted to program it, no, sorry, you're screwed.
You'll have to get one of the, you know, you have to get one of the non-genuine ones. You know, one of the kit ones.
Makes me angry.
Right.
Although
I mean, granted, there were only 200 of those produced, so you know, pretty limited.
But, still.
Yeah, I know.
You know? Yeah, still. Man, that got my blood boiling.
Breathe in, breathe out.
All right, so now I'm going to completely change focus and say to do the opposite.
Right.
Yes. So, China, right? There was this thing Tim O'Reilly had posted about. China, yes, China, bingo. but it was just a thing talking about the unrest in China and political unrest. And there's a bunch of pictures. And, you know, I'll link it in and people can look at it if they want to.
There's recent unrest in China?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, like, and there are, like, a lot of little things, right? But I started thinking about it and just how much that would screw up my world, your world, everyone's world, in electronics, right? I mean, let's just focus on electronics.
Hmm.
If China shuts its doors tomorrow, we are
they're not gonna do it.
I know they're not going to, but
it's
I'm
not
just saying
happen.
If there was a revolution and not China today but China tomorrow, right?
Right.
So my idea is, what do we do then? and maybe that there's even an investing, there's a idea that maybe you take a loss now and you start making a capacitor factory. Because you think about capacitors, right? They're everywhere. But if China shuts down tomorrow...
Well, this is Obama's new model, isn't it?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I don't think he's thinking about, like, discrete components, but...
And he's not actually going to do it. It's all just hot air, right?
I think some of it is hot air, and it's not going to extend down to components, right? I mean, that's all I care about. If China shuts down tomorrow, we don't have chips because the packaging places are in China. We don't have, you know, passives because they get in bottom of the barrel prices, right?
Yep.
And what happens then? You know, like and maybe there's a business case to starting to do that kind of thing now, because either because if something happens, you know, like either you have small runs and
there's hardly ever a business case for if something happens,
case. Yeah.
That's not how business works, unfortunately.
Well, I have no idea how business works. Come on, Dave. I'm an engineer. Come on. But maybe then there's
you
business...
You idealistic fool, you.
I know. But maybe there's a business model in having a junkyard even, like an electronics junkyard, right? Because if it got bad enough, then people are going to be pulling components off boards. Like, I mean, like, that. I was just thinking about it, and I'm like, holy crap, what do we do? I mean, like, right?
I can just picture you running around with your hands and clapping around. Holy crap, what do we do?
I know.
The sky is falling. The sky is falling.
I'm very easily influenced.
Right. It's okay. You're American.
I am, yeah.
We forgive you.
I flip from thing to thing, yes. But I think, look, we've talked about it before. There's real, even if you just take it to the non-extreme side of it, right? Then you buy Aussie or American or New Zealand in the case of those boards you got, right? Because you want to buy domestically. I just think, I was actually thinking about that, how you bought that board domestically.
Yep.
Imagine if there started to be problems, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys' orders, I mean, they maintain a business right now, right? But their orders would go through the roof if it was like what we were talking before. You know, if you need to get a board in a day or two, right? Or if you need to get a board in 2 weeks or two when everybody else needs to get the board from the same place, then there's a business case in starting that now and having a domestic supplier. You know, like there's always a cost to stuff, right? And the cost of low cost components and boards from China is risk. There is risk in it. So,
The interesting story with the PCB, Circuit Labs in New Zealand, as soon as my video went live, they were swamped with orders from all over the world. They couldn't believe it.
Bonus for them then.
Yeah, I know. They were totally caught off guard, and they had all these people wanting to get boards done. And they were swamped. They couldn't keep up. So if you got... if you didn't hear from them straight away, that's why.
Yeah, right.
That's why. Which proves that there's people out there willing to pay a bit of a price premium for, you know, a good quality product and make that, you know, that anti-China sort of stand, I guess you could say.
Or FSM help us. It means Dave actually has some influence on people.
I just talked about it. And
I know.
Sometimes it's just putting
it into the light, right? I mean, like, sometimes people don't even know it's there. So that's, that's true.
Or people might not have even thought about it before. They might thought, hey, that's not a bad idea. I've been buying all these cheapest ass boards from China, and it's probably not a good thing in the long term. And
maybe someday you can talk. Well, go on down to Chris's junkyard and, you know, pull old electrolytic caps off of a CRT board.
Right, so your house is now going to turn into this huge, big pile of, it's mine, it's all mine, I'm hoarding it for Armageddon.
aside from the show being up, I think I have to go. I think my wife is standing at the door with a machete in her hand, ready to chop me into little pieces for that.
And I forget to build my MakerBot.
You do? All right, well, good show this week, man. I got a little
worked
up.
Lots of rants, you got a lot out.
I got a
lot of frustration.
That's a good therapy session, right? And next week, we just might have Bunny on the show.
We may.
Yeah. So we can ask him about his experience with, working with Chinese suppliers or Singapore suppliers where he lives.
Well, isn't he based there?
He's based in Singapore.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yep. So we'll talk to him about that next week.
Excellent. See you then.
Bye. It was a good salt of the earth kind of episode,
Salt of the earth.